The Middle East has been a historical challenge for American presidents. The common path of past presidents has been to offer solutions and guide leaders in the region to goals which would best create stability. The foreign policy and path taken by the Obama administration, according to my next guest, has run, well, let's say, counter to that philosophy. Here to discuss specific aspects of these errors that could further ignite the region is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, contributor to a variety of publications, New York Times, L.A. Times, American Spectator, and many more. Say good morning to Herbert London. Good morning, Herbert.
Good morning. How are you?
Always a pleasure to have you here. LondonCenter.org to learn more about the work of the London Center for Policy Research. And you recently wrote about the succession rivalry uncertainty in Saudi Arabia. Obviously when a country's leader, even in a Saudi kingdom, passes away and what replaces it is, well, some would say when you look chronologically at their age, they're on their home stretch as well. That doesn't really bode well for stability. How much more worse is the Obama administration making the situation?
Well, the problem, of course, is that the Obama administration has tilted toward Iran, and the Iranians consider the Saudis the great prize. The Iranians have, in fact, surrounded Saudi Arabia by taking control of Yemen with the Iranian Revolutionary Guards working with the Houthi to take over that country. You now have a rather odd situation that the Saudis have to confront. The portal to the Red Sea is now controlled by the Iranians. The Gulf of Hormuz is controlled by the Iranians. If you look at the map and you think of this in geopolitical terms, the Saudis no longer can send their oil anywhere in the world without the permission or at least the tacit acceptance of the Iranians. This is a very interesting situation since there are obviously a rivalry between the two nations, and the oil fields in Saudi Arabia are located in the eastern part of the country, which is Shia, even though the country is a Sunni nation. So what the Iranians would like to do is see if they can combine those oil fields with their own aspirations and, of course, surround the Saudis so they do not have any ability to move their oil anywhere without their permission. This is an extraordinary set of events. It's not at all surprising that the game of chess was invented in Persia or Iran. And so we are dealing with a nation that is both clever, ambitious, imperial, and now has the support, or at least the tacit support, of the United States.
And we should also mention, too, they're very patient.
Very patient, and if you look at the negotiations that have been going on in Vienna and Geneva, what you have is a nation that is obviously saying, we'll bide our time. The United States wants a deal. We don't necessarily have to have a deal now because we're going to continue to have our centrifuges operating at full speed in order to enrich as much uranium as possible to have the fissile material in order to build nuclear weapons.
How much more is Iran empowered by, specifically with the Obama administration previously, although Egypt at least seems to be on the path of recovering, but Obama's embracing of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt as well as his increasing hostility, if that's possible, even to Israel?
Well, all of the allies in the Middle East are now looking at themselves with a somewhat perplexed look, saying, what has happened to the United States? I've traveled through the region rather widely, in fact, spent a good deal of time with el-Sisi, and I can tell you that there's just a great question mark about America. They don't understand the Obama administration. And what has happened is former allies like Saudi Arabia, like the UAE, like Egypt, and, of course, like Israel, are all asking the same question. Why is he tilting so heavily toward Iran? The United States regards, or at least this administration regards Iran, as the stabilizer in the region. But they're not a stabilizer. They're a terrorist state. And if you think that the Iranians are going to put boots on the ground in order to fight ISIL because we're reluctant to do so, that in itself is misguided. They want as much chaos as possible because they benefit from the chaos. If you look at the map, Syria today is now a vassal state of Iran, or at least that portion of it is still controlled by Assad. Assad has his position because of the Iranians. If you look at Lebanon, Lebanon is a state completely controlled by Hezbollah, which, of course, is controlled by Iran. If you look at Yemen, Yemen is now a state controlled by Iran. So the Iranian goal of creating this Shia crescent, which means domination of the Middle East, is obviously taking place, and doing so with the United States either averting its gaze or being an active participant by allowing the Iranians to have this kind of leverage.
Talking with Herbert London, who is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, on the web LondonCenter.org. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. You have to think back to recent history, too, when there was the uprising for freedom in Iran. Obama was silent on that.
Well, you may remember in the election there was an opportunity for the president, even if the United States was not or would not engage in direct intervention, there was an opportunity for the president to make a direct statement in support of those people who were out on the streets demonstrating against the election, what was obviously a set-up election. And the president said not a word, not one word. So the demonstrators, looking for at least some emotional support on the part of the United States, received nothing. And that was a telling moment, because it suggested that the United States believed that it could, in fact, negotiate with the mullahs. And at least from my point of view, this is a somewhat misguided notion.
Of course, just the other day at the National Prayer Breakfast, where, you know, the expectations of the president is fairly simple. You go out and stand up at the podium and worship, fellowship, and keep things positive. Obama decided to lecture the world on Christianity, comparing it to radical Islam, technically. You could take it, you know, pick apart whatever he said and try to lessen it as you can. But what you mentioned, too, with the growth of Iran, that seems to be, if Obama wants to go back into history, seems like Iran wants to put back together the caliphate, which, by the way, also encompasses Europe back in the days.
Well, I think one of the problems is that the president really selects his history as a revisionist. If you look at the Crusades, and I'm about to, in any sense, support what the Christians did during the course of the Crusades, but it took 300 years of Arab intervention in European affairs and the atrocities that occurred for the Europeans to finally respond with the Crusades. The Crusades were largely a response to the intervention on the part of the Muslims in Europe. So, again, if you're looking at history, and I'm not in any sense trying to say that the Crusades, that the European Christians conducted themselves properly. But I am trying to say that they were a response to the Muslim intervention in Europe. Now, to compare those events hundreds of years ago with what is happening today is on one level rather absurd, almost childlike. But the second thing about it is to create a sense of moral equivalence, that there is some suggestion that what was done by the Crusades has some relevance to the way in which ISIL is conducting its affairs, is barbaric. It is almost as barbaric in rhetorical terms as the actual conditions that exist in the ISIL world.
And this, as we just saw, ISIL burned alive one of their captives.
It's how can anyone compare that, these contemporary conditions? The world has evolved into a world that we thought was far more decent. Here we have people who are turning back the clock to the 7th century, using the most primitive kind of procedures to deal with the enemy. And what they're doing is attempting to intimidate parts of the world. At least you see on the part of King Abdullah a real response, as opposed to the kind of lackluster responses you get from this administration. Almost a yawn every single time someone is beheaded or there's another atrocity that occurs. So what kind of attitude? An Alfred E. Newman response on the part of the president. This, it strikes me, is not the way a president should behave, nor is it appropriate for the United States as the great power in the world to behave. That doesn't mean we have to be a policeman everywhere, but certainly these kinds of events should lead to outrage. Not only outrage, but we should be sending our troops into this area to clean out this mess. You got 45,000 people who sit in ISIL. Now, this is a relatively small force. Give me 3 or 4 Marine brigades, let me go in there for 2 weeks, and we'll wipe them out. Now, there's no reason why this can't happen, except you have a president who's reluctant to deploy any American forces in this area any longer. And the problem with that is, of course, the pinprick bombing that we engage in is not having any effect, and there is not a sufficient army with the Iraqi army and Meshperga to take on ISIL. And so they've got a pretty much of a free run, despite the setback in Kobani this last week.
And also there was a report that the Obama administration is going to ask Congress for a 3-year authorization for military action against ISIL, but the devil is in the details. If it's a status quo of what's been done so far, then, you know, needle on the haystack reverse, I guess you could say, would be the path for any future military action in Iran. And, of course, the terrorists will just be laughing their way to their at least intended goals. Learn more about these issues and the work of the London Center for Policy Research is londoncenter.org. Be sure to look for Herbert's writings in a variety of publications and outlets, including The American Spectator, more recently The Hill, and Google his name because you'll find some wisdom in the words that he writes in Truth, which scares a lot of people but educates those with common sense and desire to make things right. Herbert London, thanks for being here this morning.
Always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you so much.